AirPod, like iPhone AirPods.
They're
Apple Air.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what Apple.
Apple AirPods.
It's all the same. Ooh, yeah.
Did you watch that video all the way through of Jordan Peterson?
No.
You should watch the whole video.
It's on my to-do list.
Like, it's not just the fact that we agree with, like, everything that he says, but it's that it's the personification of a nightmare argument you'd have with some douchebag who the only reason they're there is to piss you off. Like,
how long is it?
It's like 30 minutes, maybe. Oh. Just an interview. But it's like, you know, we've had those interviews before where,
yeah,
or those arguments where they're like, well, you just want to do this. Well, you just want to do this. Well, you just want to do this. Like,
no, that's not what I want to do at
like,
all.
Just misrepresenting everything you're saying, taking it to the logical worst extreme. she tries it so hard, and he just like, it is a textbook, like how to debate, how to do a hostile interview. Like, it needs to be in classrooms.
I can't wait. I love Jordan Peterson. Galt, can you give me a test in the mic, please?
Yeah. Check, check. Check, check. Test 1, 2, 3, 4. So sources say the report is explosive, stating they would not be surprised if it leads to the end of Mueller's special counsel into the president.
Shoot.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, make screenshot that. We'll... yeah.
All right.
How familiar are you guys with FISA? Any
FISA what?
FISA Section 270 got passed today?
Nice, read it.
Don't they make medicine?
I mean, read it on the show.
Okay, I'll explain it. And then you guys just...
Yeah, FISA's the original...
I mean, I know what FISA is. I don't
right.
know what this section is.
Isn't it the same section?
I'm basically just going to say this feels like an episode from 2012. Because we're rehashing the renewal of FISA.
Yeah.
The government's about to shut down.
It's like the new Patriot Act.
Yeah. All
it's
right.
It's not called the Patriot Act anymore.
Here we go.
All right.
Almost about ready to start. All right. We are live on Facebook.
Can you hear through this?
Feel swole? Yeah, you
I
should
can't.
Be.
I can't.
You can't hear anything?
Nope. Nothing. Nothing at all. Hello.
How about now?
Hello, nothing.
How many little
check,
Chinese
check,
kids
check.
Do you think were forced
can
to
you hear
that,
me?
Huh?
What?
Well, if he's not going to wear his, wear those.
Okay.
I don't know why that jack's not working. That jack's off.
That jack.
That was lazy.
Oh, man.
No, that was good.
Yeah. That was lazy.
Too loud or good?
Your voice is so smooth.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
We do need to get...
It's butter in my ears.
Someone who has like a very white style voice. Or an Isaac Hayes style voice or something.
There's a guy in Newcastle that's doing stuff for Bob and Tom now, and yeah, that's good.
Okay.
And he's got he's gonna do stuff for Boss Hogg and Bob and Tom, and he
oh nice.
He was up at the studios, he's like, "Good morning, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Hello, children."
You almost sound like Rupert.
Right. So I play Santa Claus on the Circle.
Uh-huh.
For the radio station at the Circle of Lights, and that's literally the impression that I do. How are you? Nice to meet you, little girl. I was on Survivor.
You gotta work up a flop sweat, though.
All right, here
Every
we go.
Every time I've ever seen him talk, he's got like this big flop sweat going on.
Well, it's because he's always in like cargo shirts and a tie-dye t-shirt. And so when you saw him in the political days, he was in like two layers and he's like not used to it.
Are we on camera too?
Yeah.
Where is it at?
Right there.
It's on Facebook Live in the Dear Leaders Court. Here. Yeah. See?
Only the fancy people can see us.
Yeah. I think you're in the group.
The Facebook chat? Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
All right. Here we go. Welcome. Oh, Creighton.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians.
I pick my nose a lot, Christopher Thomas. I have a nasal drip. I don't know where my Afrin is. If you ever see me get up in the middle of a show, it's because I need a hit. Here we go. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff, like free shows, like hours a week on that private RSS feed that only Patreon subscribers can get. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us stories and news with the hashtags WAL News or WAL Politics, or in our group and Discord channel. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. We're going to talk about the government shutdown and FISA and breaking news that Chris Galt was just reading me before the show about the Mueller investigation. But Thursday shows that we record Tuesday evenings and Thursday evenings. Tuesday evenings are what are the headlines of the week? Thursdays are a little more of a deep dive and a little less serious. I cannot strain less serious enough with this show tonight. When we are we have the original cast of We Are Libertarians for the first 30, 40 episodes. It was myself, Chris Galt. How are you?
Pretty great.
And Creighton Harrington. Creighton, how are you?
I'm good.
He looks like he's been keeping up on his muscles.
See, Creighton is the least professional of all the co-hosts that we have. He's one of the smartest, if not the smartest. I would say James Neese and Creighton Harrington are probably in the running for the two smartest co-hosts we've had. I'd say Greg is definitely up there.
We should do another Fractional Reserve Banking episode.
Well, we could tonight. You two could not have prepared less for this episode, which is so much like the old days.
To fill in the time, he almost brought his guitar.
Oh, yeah, back in
he was going to sing his lullabies.
I am in black. Back in black.
See, Creighton once brought his electric guitar a podcast. Galt, how annoyed was I?
You looked like you wanted to kill him.
It's because I did.
I was shredding it, though, so.
You were having a great time.
It was his favorite one.
It was after recording, so.
Yeah.
Everything good was after recording.
I didn't know about autism. So, like, now I see it clearly in young Creighton. But
I am a well-put-together young man.
You're very handsome. Your hairline's not receding.
Not yet.
You got a nice beard.
I need to.
Rogaine.
Here, you're gonna need to talk.
They can hear me. They don't care what I have to say at this point, anyway.
See, so Creighton is the least professional. Yet one
of, and he sounds like a pessimist.
I haven't said a single curse word yet. So
no, you haven't.
That's professional.
Yeah. I was wondering how many I was gonna count them.
Yeah, so when was the last time the three of us, just the three of us, did an episode?
Probably when he punched me.
No, we did one.
Tried to punch me.
We did one in between, didn't we?
I think, there was like, it was a month later.
We did the Morty show.
Well, yeah, but that,
yeah,
I'm
but
saying,
that was all of us.
Just us three, because after Chris left, Greg came in, and Greg replaced Galt.
Wow, we haven't been in the same room together.
We haven't.
Yeah, where is Greg?
See, there's a weird tradition. There's a weird tradition on this podcast of co-hosts quitting, and some of them take that very seriously. Greg's doing great. Greg is starting a new podcast, a new website, Athwart History, I think is it.
Say a Buckley quote.
Yep. So go check that out.
Big surprise that he would name his podcast after a Buckley quote.
So, but yes, he carried on the tradition. He and Kat, and they're still together, and they're doing great. And but Galt, you're a conspiracy theorist.
What? You guys always call me that.
All right. So how would you describe yourself?
Huh?
How would you describe yourself then?
I'm open-minded.
A person willing to believe in alternate facts.
I'm willing to consider alternate facts.
So in March 8th, 2012, We Are Libertarians started with the three of us. I knew Galt because he had worked on some campaigns with me. And he said, I've got this smart friend who loves to talk. He'd be a good third. I said, bring him on over.
I did like to talk.
It's nice to meet you, Clayton Harrison. And I had no idea what his name was till the third episode.
Yeah, Clayton.
And we did one episode the week before, and I lost it. Mm-hmm. I didn't record it.
Record it again.
And then...
Yeah, you had to carry your entire computer into the recording room at that time. Like, you literally, just imagine every time, like, he's got his office, and then we come to record, and he carries literally a PC tower into every, and this happened for, like, at least a month before you finally got something that could stay in the room.
Yeah, the Zoom H2, finally.
So Creighton's a genius, and I'm a conspiracy theorist. That's what you see.
I think you're a very smart person.
Well,
that's accurate.
Tell me why the lawyer. The you're, lawyer.
I consider you a very. I consider you a very stable genius.
Tell me why the lawyer. A very stable genius.
That's a huge statement there.
So Galt and Creighton. So Galt wanted to talk. He started talking about fluoride and wanted to do a show about conspiracies. But here's the thing. Like now. 5-6 years later, in the world where Alex Jones is mainstream and everybody's willing to, people like want us to talk about conspiracies now because they want to hear about Waco and the Unabomber.
They wanted
and,
to hear about it before,
right? But polite you, I, society. I was,
here's what I am. I was, I'm a progressive.
I was still.
You
I was
guys
a normie.
Were behind.
I was
me.
A normie. Yes,
and now you're catching up.
This is the difference at that time in our niche at that time. If we had gone down the route of having 9/11 truth episodes, we would not be in the same basket that we're in right now.
No, we would not. We're fighting for relevance and respectability at this point.
I don't understand how a debate about one of the deadliest events in history would have
See, this
changed
is why,
anyone's mind. You guys would have defended the actual story. Somebody else may not have, but you would have won, right? Because that's the truth to you. So I don't understand how that would have swayed your audience or changed anything about your
we
show.
We didn't really have an audience at that
if
point.
We had,
right, we really only had 30
so
people listening.
Absolutely nothing would have changed. You would be exactly where you are right now with episode 37 being
the
9/11. It wouldn't have been a big deal.
See, this is why Galt got punched. He didn't actually.
I did not punch Galt.
So Creighton was like, I will not attach.
You football tackled me.
I didn't football tackle
you. No,
either.
Because. No, boys.
I remember it very clearly.
I do too, because it's one of the funniest moments of my life.
I was there.
Right. And I stood up to break you two up, and then Galt swung the slowest punch I've ever seen in my life. It was in slow motion.
It was definitely a reluctant punch.
He was like, there was like, as he was.
I described it at Morty's.
As he was swinging, he was going, my dad. So yeah, we acted it out on episode 200 of We Are Libertarians. You can go back and listen, but yeah, then they got into a fight, and then Galt went into a dark room and felt remorse. Creighton left in a huff, as he should, and Galt was like, I'm really sorry, man. I'm like, it's okay. And as they all left, I was like, this is the end of the podcast. Galt or Creighton is going to quit after this. And it only took 3 or 4 episodes for that to happen.
It wasn't me.
I didn't quit.
Well, you didn't quit. I fired you.
Yeah.
Thus the name Dear Leader was born. But you were being a bit of a pain in the ass.
With my great ideas that you now would have loved, but back then you just hated.
You see, Galt is a very insistent person. I love you because you are gung-ho. You are like, I have this idea. I want to execute this idea. And
it's all about execution.
Exactly right. But I want to execute you when I say I don't want to do that idea. And you go, I want to execute that nonetheless. So I had to, he forced a choice. He's like, listen, it's me or Creighton.
I wouldn't have forced the choice if you would have let me post all those great Creighton memes I was making. And they were fantastic, and I wish we had them in
the
catalog, and you wouldn't have deleted them.
I do too.
They were great.
But he was mad, and I was just trying to keep the group together.
You were trying to keep Creighton on your side.
No.
You took the chat out of the chat. That is
true.
That was what was over the line.
That is true. You can't take the wall chat out of the chat.
I don't think I did that.
You did do that.
You did.
Nope.
Yeah, you did. You're fighting with Harry right now, aren't you?
I think that's Jeremiah's rule, and Jeremiah wasn't a part of it back then.
That's right.
So there was no.
You do have seniority over Boss Hogg.
Just saying.
If Creighton and Galt want to cancel Boss Hogg of Liberty, they should be allowed to.
We'll be expecting bribes from around.
What? He doesn't even know the Boss Hogg.
I know it's Jeremiah's show.
He's like, what
show,
show's that?
They're 40 shows in. He has a vague awareness.
I know it's a show.
Dude,
I don't even listen to this
too.
Show as much as I used to, man.
You never listen to the show. So
it's because I used to listen to it because I was there when it was recorded. And I'm like, oh, shit. And it's like 2 hours a pop. God damn. I got other stuff to do.
So funny.
You don't drive for at least 2 hours a day?
No.
It's quite easy for me.
Where do you drive 2 hours?
I mean, I drive all over the city. I mean, I sell business.
Oh, that's right. So yeah, you're right.
I'm driving everywhere. All over. Southwest side, all my...
Net neutrality thoughts, go. Let's dive into some topics.
Why? Okay. We can do this, I guess.
Yeah. Net neutrality, Chris Galt.
Great.
You're
that
for
it's
it.
Gone.
Great that it's gone.
Woo.
All right. So you draw a paycheck from one of these big internet companies.
Yeah, the one that lobbied to get rid of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're all for it, then.
All for it. I got a $1,000 bonus.
Personal and
selfishness. No. Really, I don't know. It's the big scary goat that the media and the internet has made you believe is, you know, going to end the internet.
See, this is
it's not. The internet's still here today.
Yeah, this is a retro episode because if you go back and look at the first 40 episodes of the show, you're going to we're going to talk about FISA reauthorization of Section 702.
We talked about that back then.
We talked about it then. We're going to talk about net neutrality. Yep. Talked about it then. Government shutdown.
Yep. SOPA. Remember SOPA?
Rand Paul filibusters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unfortunately, this one was a light filibuster, which is annoying because the first one was like Mr. Smith goes to Washington style.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. This one is a fake filibuster.
I mean, I was like I can't stop watching this. This is great. Now I didn't even know this last one happened.
Yeah, I guess they got cloutered so quickly.
Claire McCaskill shut it down. 60 votes, cloutered it.
Right.
Full cloture.
Which I've had arguments on Reddit recently where they're talking about how Republicans and FISA and they want to spy on you. I'm like, they ain't 60 Republicans in the Senate. Rand Paul was trying to filibuster that.
Right. Yeah. All right, so... Let me ask this, Creighton. Do you follow politics at all anymore? You used to work for Young Americans for Liberty.
Yeah,
and
no,
you were in the swamp.
I follow it. Yeah,
he was so deep in the swamp. He put disclaimers on every episode.
Right,
go
he
back
made
and
us.
Listen to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you have a Facebook news feed of a certain type, it's really hard to get rid of it. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Oh, don't worry. They're going to, whether you want them to or not.
So it's, yeah, I keep up on everything. I mean.
If it gets too bad, I'm waiting on Google Plus for you.
Yeah, I'm waiting. You're the only one there.
Yeah, Google's the savior for that. Google, we're part of the people.
They haven't killed it off because they're just waiting.
Listen.
Facebook will mess up.
No, Facebook is already at MySpace. I mean, I'm so fit to be tied over YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm done with it all.
Well, once Facebook's gone, it's not going to be like, it's a Google Plus is going to take over.
Once Facebook doesn't like Facebook.
Yeah, but once people like remove themselves from Facebook en masse, then it's going to be like social media of that style is just not going to be a thing.
We're one of the people that got cut from the YouTube Partner Program. It's not like we ever made any money. I think we made $20 off of YouTube ads, but it's the principle of the thing. We have to get up to 1,000 subscribers, so if you would go to YouTube and subscribe to We Are Libertarians, we post the video of every show. You can watch the show. You can see what Creighton looks like. You can see what Galt looks like.
Ooh.
Me.
You can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, you can. We also put the audio version up there for those of you playing at home. And WAL Politics also has a YouTube feed. But these big companies in the name of political correctness really are doing everything they can to kill their brand. I mean, it started with Elaine Pao over at Reddit. And Reddit really was the first to start sacrificing its subscriber base and its basically its agreement with users. Hey, this is a platform for free speech, and then it became this is a platform for free speech as long as it fits within the confines of a leftist worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And now Facebook and Twitter and YouTube are right there with him 2 years later. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, all the Veritas stuff with Twitter coming out.
Yeah, Project Veritas, we touched on that last episode, but basically mm-hmm. they came out and said, we're more than willing to help them take down the president.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm looking at it going, and I've said this, I said this for months, and now they're doing it. They're going to change the algorithm. People don't want to go on Facebook because they're tired of Trump. So what they're going to do is show you your friends and family again. And they're going to de-emphasize pages and move everybody over to tabs. And anything that's political, they'll just silence. And then, you know, for content creators like us, you probably want to see our stuff. Yeah. You probably want to see what
that's
I find.
I liked it.
Right. If I wouldn't like your stuff if I didn't want to see what Reason has to say. And so they don't care about that. And what they'll eventually do is once that outrage grows stronger, they'll adopt partners. And so, well, if you want news, you can get news in your Facebook feed from the New York Times, and we'll put this little box over here, and there will be a news widget, and it'll be curated, and we'll make sure that right voices are never there. It's really, and I think all these different platforms are going that direction. I mean, you've seen it with YouTube. If you go to the news section, it's just their partners, like the New York Times video.
And all those companies you named are the same companies that stood up for net neutrality. An open and, you know, even playing field, and they're the ones controlling the playing field.
It's exactly right.
And that's
right.
Exactly why they wanted to keep it.
Yeah, which I think is a very valid point, because it's not like I like AT&T and Comcast.
Right.
I have AT&T. It's a very poor product that
well,
I have
here.
You
would love Comcast.
I would. If
you would
could,
love it.
Please. I would love you to go over to my apartment complex and sell them some Comcast.
I'll talk to them.
Please.
Yeah.
So, Creighton, what do you think about all this?
I mean, I feel like the audience of this show probably knows where we're going to fall on net neutrality.
But
I mean,
they tuned in because they wanted you to say it.
I know. You all just want affirmative voices here. No, I mean it's...
You've never been an affirmative voice.
I mean, it's a typical... For me, it's always been, even if there is a danger of Comcast or AT&T or whomever throttling internet because of whatever reason, to me that's a lesser evil than giving the FCC the ability to control the infrastructure of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people think, oh well, that's, they're not going to manage content, they're not going to do this, they're not going to do that, they're just making sure that it's an even playing field. It's like, if you give the FCC, the government, control of the infrastructure of the internet, you give them control of the internet.
Right.
And you know, maybe I am a little too paranoid, but you're giving the government control of something that has reshaped society, reshaped civilization in ways that are profound, were not anticipated upon, you know, the arrival of the internet. And you're basically saying, let's lock in a style of management of this system that exists today that may not work in the next 15 years, 20 years. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't.
Maybe it will, because it'll completely stifle innovation.
Yeah. And so you're basically telling all of these. And to me, the big thing is that I think a lot of people don't like the idea of, they think of like throttling, like, oh, Comcast disagrees with this point of view, so they're going to throttle access to your website. And that's the big boogeyman that everyone's worried about. But what it will end up doing is mostly would have been, to prevent unique pricing schemes, to give people, you know, preferred access if they paid more for certain things than if they hadn't paid more. And all that stuff ends up going into the actual infrastructure itself to increase its, you know, how efficient it is, how wide it is, get access to new areas. You know, all these things cost money. Yeah. And you can't get that if you don't have people paying for it. So if you're going to prevent infrastructures companies from being able to invest in their systems because they're not getting as much revenue than they otherwise could have, then you're preventing the internet from growing at a rate that it could be growing. You're still going to have internet, but it's not going to be as sophisticated as it otherwise could have been.
We still have roads. But yeah. We know if we had private roads, they'd be a lot more innovative right now.
Mm. So I want to read this comment because it isn't something, I mean, go on our Facebook page and post one way on net neutrality and it's just a S show. Our Facebook page turns into a real asshole.
It's surprising how there is a significant split within libertarian circles in this.
Because a lot of libertarians have bought into what EFF and other tech outlets and companies like Facebook and Google are saying, as opposed to, you know, a voice like mine, which says, I work in the radio industry. I've lived through the censorship of Janet Jackson. And knowing what you can and can't say.
And it's important to point out that that was not originally in the FCC's mandate.
It wasn't.
When they were originally created, their job was to just make sure radio frequencies didn't overlap in specific areas.
That you couldn't go, you know, we're on 94.7, that 95.5 can't jam the 94.7 right. signal without prosecution.
The censorship came afterwards. It's just right. It's another example of mission creep that happens with any kind of bureaucracy.
Exactly. So the FCC is not a free speech organization, and you're talking about the greatest tool of human speech. Free speech ever, and then you have these companies like Facebook, Google, and Twitter succumbing to basically thought control and limiting speech on their platforms. So a friend got a 30-day ban for saying something that was, I mean, it wasn't anything that I found inappropriate. I know I'm broken as a person because I grew up on the internet, but I sit there and I go, you know, as far as violating community guidelines, there's a lot of people in that person's community that wanted to see that. They thought that was funny. And it goes back to the community standards argument when they would rule against Howard Stern or Bubba the Love Sponge, and they'd say, well, this isn't in the community interest for Howard Stern to interview a naked woman. Well, in some of the communities, it is in some of the community's interest to hear that kind of speech. Like, who is the FCC to rule on that or not? So it's a case of I don't want to go fight my local and state governments, which would be easier for you to do than to fight the FCC, I promise you. So I'll just have the FCC fix it. Adam wrote in and corrected me on something, Adam Nelson. So I figured it seems like a good time to write this and see if you guys disagree with this. Hey, I listened to you on the most recent podcast on Bitcoin and net neutrality, and I feel like you had some information mixed up. Yes, the FCC's decision to repeal net neutrality only repealed something that put in place in 2015. However, the reason why those rules were put in place was because the FCC also ruled that year that internet providers were no longer considered telecommunication companies, removing the restriction that all landlines must carry phone provider signals regardless of the owner. That was following a 2005 ruling that Madison River must allow VoIP service, phone calls over the internet that was run by a computer to use their internet service. Also, as to internet companies owning the infrastructure for internet service in many regions, there are government-enforced monopolies, according to this 2013 article. Yeah, we know there's monopolies at the local level. What I'm saying is go to your local government and get those monopolies repealed or replaced. It isn't that hard to write a bill. Or to go and pull up the various local ordinances that define that and write something to change it and then lobby to get that done. You can do that, and you can do that in a fairly short amount of time, create a local government that is competitive and bring in somebody like a Spectrum or a Metronet when you only have a Comcast and a Verizon, and then you make yourself a more attractive community. So the argument that I get from net neutrality proponents where, well, there's so many local and state regulations, I get that. Change it.
Don't add more. Add a whole nother layer.
At a whole nother level that is way – you have five people. Three are Republicans, two are Democrats right now. And when the parties switch, these are people who are largely – they're political appointees, so they're subject to more corruption. They're not this council of gods that will save the internet. Do some work. Like I get so tired of libertarians. That's really like the net neutrality brings out a lot of statist tendencies, where you go, it'll never change. So let's just have the federal government fix it. It's like, no. I mean, Martin Luther King, as we discussed on the last episode, is a great example of somebody who organized a movement in local areas and changed local governments. And it wasn't until it was completely intractable at these local and state levels, and you had those state and local governments violating the Constitution and federal and state and their local laws, that the Civil Rights Bill was passed. And libertarians argue whether that was good or not, but they were at least trying instead of getting online and going, I'm upset. Like, go. It's not that hard to write a law. It really isn't.
And these laws that are these giant webs of generalization like that, they just don't work.
Right.
If there is a problem, fix it at the local level then.
I guarantee that everybody who goes online and says, oh, at the local level, we have all these rules at local and state level, it's like, monopolies. Like, have you read the law?
But they're like, it's monopolized in this rural area here in random North Dakota. I'm like, then let North Dakota fix that.
Right.
That has nothing to do with New York City.
It is so much easier to make change at the local level than you realize. Because so few people...
We've made change at local level.
We have, and Galt can attest to this. So few people actually care about their local government that nobody ever shows up to it. And so when a citizen walks in a room with a video camera, they all go, what is that? Boss Hog of Liberty is basically setting their... What they're working on is setting a template for local counties, basically to be a watchdog on local government and build a media outlet for their local county. And then what we're going to do is... After a period of time where we feel we've worked out the bugs, say, here's how we did it. Here's the guide to creating your own local media outlet that can change local government. And, you know, they're now interviewing...
We need to make We Are Libertarians chapters.
Well, that's
all
kind of
across
what,
the country.
That's kind of what we're working
people
on.
People can organize and change local policy. You know, one of the best people I've ever seen organize a state...
Who?
This guy right
Creighton
here.
Harrington.
Creighton Harrington.
Put you in charge.
He organized the entire state of Indiana.
Creighton seems nonplussed.
Oh, it was amazing.
And so Adam continues.
There's nothing to say.
Chapters.
I know. I believe as a libertarian that net neutrality is a necessary evil until we can bar government from harming competition so that smaller ISPs and tech companies can remain as viable startups.
That's the fundamental problem with that is that it once a government policy. This, frankly, the fact that net neutrality got repealed is beyond insanely rare. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Milton Friedman has quotes where it's like, there's nothing more permanent than a government program or something. Or maybe it was Reagan. And it's a joke, but it speaks to a truth. Like, you know, we're talking about, oh, well, we need to have net neutrality until, you know, these little ISPs can catch up. It's like, if net neutrality exists and it's like a popular thing, it isn't just some... If it becomes like a legal thing, like if Congress passes a law to enforce net neutrality or something, it's gone. It's there forever. It's mm-hmm. never going to go away, no matter what. If you know, if the sentiment changes, if little ISPs do catch up to big ISPs, it's still going to be there.
Right.
It locks in a style of management forever, and that's something I don't think people realize. Like, people have very short term. They don't take a long term outlook with a lot of this stuff. They're like, there's a problem here that we could solve pretty quickly with this, and that's what I'm thinking about. But what about this and this and this and this along down the line? Mm-hmm. Oh, he say it could be anything, you know, and you know, you don't really realize it. It's like you don't know what the future brings. You don't. Mm-hmm. You have no idea. You cannot anticipate the different styles of anything that will exist within internet infrastructure. Pricing schemes for internet, for mobile devices, for all that. You just cannot see that. No one is smart enough to know what's going to happen. So what you're saying is, let's lock in this specific one because I'm familiar with it.
And as Ajit Pai basically said, there's been a 5% slowdown in innovation and expansion of broadband across the nation because they're dealing with more regulation because they have to go through the FCC to get a lot of stuff cleared. And so,
and let's not forget that the this was passed in a time when basically every reason for passing it that was given by net neutrality advocates were like one case in, you know, millions. Like it was very rare that anything that they said we needed net neutrality to stop actually was happening. Like, prior to net neutrality, there was, you know, they argued we needed this to prevent this thing from happening and this thing from happening, but those things weren't happening. And then, obviously, they weren't happening when net neutrality was happening. Now net neutrality, all we've done is move back to 2015 internet. Like, it's not like we've gone to, you know, the Gilded Age or something. It's it's literally 2015 internet when none of these problems were happening to begin with. Now, you could probably cite, hey, here's an example of it happening and here's an example of it happening. But, like, I can give you, like, outliers of any kind of statement. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that there's a general trend. And general trends are what should be legislated upon, not specific instances of, you know, some scary thing that may have happened one time and been a fluke.
Well, it's also weird to see libertarians, you know, so much of the criticism of the Obama era was executive action was too intense. And at the time, you go back and listen to the episode, we criticized this move because it's executive action where Congress should have acted. And these are libertarians sticking up for Obama executive action. And there's a lot of stuff that Trump is repealing that I see the people in the libertarian movement freaking out about. And if you probably went back to their post at that time, they're like, I don't trust Obama and his executive action. It's like, well, Trump's repealing that. It's like DACA is a great example of it. DACA is something, again, we talked about in those first 30 episodes where it's just been an executive can being kicked down the road. And Trump said, no, Congress needs to fix it. And now they're having trouble fixing it. They're kicking everything down.
Or the weed memo.
Yeah, go ahead.
The weed memo. Like, Obama should have used his political capital to just legalize marijuana rather than just tell executive agencies, don't worry about
it. Just don't worry
about it. Because then what happens, Trump gets elected, puts the worst guy possible in charge of the Department of Justice, and he says, that memo is gone. And now we're not going to
we
just let you get away with it.
Right.
And, like, you know, if you would have used some effort. Like, this is something that gets me in general is, like, a lot of these issues, Obama had a lot of political capital at the beginning of his administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had a lot of political capital really throughout, but he really had a lot when they had the supermajority. And they used all of that to do health care, but he didn't really put any effort into any other things that could have been there was a chance that marijuana could have been legalized, at least medically, on the federal level during that early administration. And liberals put no emphasis on it. It's because they don't prioritize it as much as they'd like to say they do. But instead he said, well, I'm just going to make an executive action, make a memo. And then what happens, it's like you have an executive action, then you can either undo it or they can, you know, the next president has the same power. And, you know, the worst guy imaginable to the left got elected. And what does he do? Exactly what we said he would do.
It's really hard to understand what Obama did. You know, you're right. Looking back, I can remember the end of Clinton and the end of Bush and the end of Obama. Well, Clinton had good approval ratings, but the Lewinsky scandal and the impeachment completely sapped all of his abilities. Bush was a pariah. I mean, nobody liked George Bush.
That financial crisis hit at the perfect moment.
Right, yeah. And Obama, he at the end, I think he, especially that last year where it looks like Trump could be a presidential option, everybody was like, no, let's keep Obama. At least he's not going to do anything. You know, like, even I was like, I don't know. They're both going to add trillions to the debt. At least this one's nice. But he did squander, especially in that area. But it is interesting as we kind of reflect, like, looking back years. It's like the conspiracy thing. So much of what we talked about in 2012 – things, it's almost like things don't matter as much now. Like, things were much more intense and much more, like, and I don't know if it's because I was a normie. You know, we were normies. We hadn't seen the famous 4chan meme of the grandmother that shall go remain unnamed. Like,
was that was your deflowering?
Yes, yes. It just seems like in politics and in political conversation, we're much more comfortable with a lot of stuff. It's like the brink of nuclear war will do that.
You have to be now. Like, our lives are cartoons now.
Right.
Like, there's like what was considered, like, normal and respectable is now just out the window. Like,
right.
And then the left is saying, well, let's have Oprah run. Like,
right.
Like, it literally is a Simpson. Our
Hawaii
life is
was
a
hit
Simpsons
by a missile.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody believed it for like an hour, too.
Right. Making
the whole world.
People were
it's
making
like, Hawaii's
memes.
Gone.
Right. Well,
rest in peace, Hawaii.
That'll happen in the Trump age.
Like,
we're just going to lose a state.
It's true. Like,
but California's splitting up. You heard that?
I know. I'm
so they'll add it back in.
Go ahead, Craig.
Just on one level, I'm kind of okay with it. Like, people recognizing a lot of what government is as, you know, kind of farcical. And it now there's no way around it. You know, you look at it and you're like, this is a circus.
Right.
When at least beforehand it was like a respectable circus.
Right.
They could at least put on a good show and you wouldn't notice that it's actually just a bunch of people on trapezes. But now you can't get away with that. Like, everyone's like, it is a circus. Like, there's people out there trying to make it still be respectable. But, you know, the immediate response is some, you know, dude in the back of his pickup truck with a mullet saying, "Hey, Trump."
If you want an illustration of that, there is no better illustration of us not taking politics seriously anymore. Like the fact that Alex Jones now has become a credible news source.
Right. I mean,
it's insane. So many ways. Because, like, he's taken seriously because it 4 or 5 years ago, he was a joke. Now people watch him and take him seriously because the president has broken so many norms and
people
has pushed.
People have always taken him seriously.
I know they have, but
people have always taken him seriously, and there are a place in the media for people like Alex Jones, and that is the foundation and the bedrock of a free press is to have people like that. That
I agree.
People like we can look at and decide for ourselves what he's saying.
I have decided that he's a nutcase.
I spend a couple hours a week with Alex. I love Alex. I showed my friend Michelle was over last night, and I showed her Gay Frogs. She had never watched a second of Alex Jones, and I go, "Well, we're watching Gay Frogs then.
we're having an Alex Jones party. Bring your juicy juice."
She's a social worker and a super, you know, progressive, and basically, 2 years ago, Tad Western called Africa a shithole, and she about punched him, and it was because she was so outraged by it. Now she's just like, whatever, that's just politics now. Like, it is. It's just people's Overton window has just shifted so far that Alex Jones looks like a serious member of the media.
And it's what's insane to me is how 90, I don't know, like maybe we'll find out. Maybe after Trump, people have kind of gotten sick of him. Maybe he doesn't get reelected. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. I couldn't say left or right on that. But, like, maybe it'll shift back to where,
isn't
like, remember that yawp that we had back in the days that was crazy, and now everybody's respectable again. But, like, you know, anything that man says is stuff that would have ruined the political career of anyone beforehand.
One thing, Stormy Daniels alone.
Yeah. But that was what his charm was to an extent. Like,
right.
That's what got him to the level that he was at. And it was regardless, you know, if it's maybe it's something that's going to pass on to a lot of other people. You know, you haven't really seen anyone else other than Trump say Trump-like things in Congress or anything. So maybe it is Trump is the only one that can do it. Or maybe it is that you're going to have more. I mean, what's his face in Alabama that lost was probably the closest, you know, Trump analog in Congress that didn't get elected, but would have been
right.
Maybe if he had won. But, like, you know, is it something that only Trump's going to be able to do when he's gone? It's back to West Wing style politics, or is it going to be when Trump's gone, there's just going to be another guy who fills that vacuum and just takes it and keeps the circus going?
I don't know, because after Perot, you had the Reform Party, and Trump was part of that. He was running on the Reform Party ticket in 2000. And if you've read Mike Duncan's book about the fall of the Roman Empire, so Mike Duncan is the History of Rome podcast guy, and he wrote a book, I think it's The Shadow Before the Shadow, I think that's the title. But basically, it's about the last 150 years of the Roman Republic before you get to, you know, the triumvirate and Caesar. And he talks about the breakdown of Mos Maiorum. Hardcore History has a new podcast out, which is like an addendum, and he's interviewed by Dan Carlin about his book. And so if you don't like reading, you can go listen to that. I'll put it in the show notes. But he talks about the breakdown of Mos Maiorum, where it is the breakdown of these norms, where you have in Roman society for almost 1,000 years these traditions of how society operates. You have these institutions of here's the class system and here's this and here's that, And then the Gracchi come along, the Gracchi brothers, and completely start shredding Mos Maiorum, those traditions, and it leads to the fall of the empire within 200 years because they, in an effort basically to be demagogues, to gain power for themselves, violating what they knew couldn't be done in an effort to gain power for themselves,
they were
destroyed the Republic.
They were probably, definitely not the first, but you know, early major populists.
Right.
Like they got much of their political advancement by promising stuff to the plebs and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like that's
the soldiers.
That's what they were all about. And yeah, and that wasn't really, there was like specific areas you're supposed to be in if you were certain classes and stuff. But and they just yeah, they basically said, well, we're going to use this. Here's an untapped demographic.
Yep.
And next thing you know, 100 years later, Julius Caesar breaks all the norms and we know how that ended.
And so I look at Trump with a lot of terror in a lot of ways because I see him, you read this book and you just see a lot of the parallels and it's not Trump's fault, right? It's not the Gracchi's fault. It is the fact that the populations of Rome and now the populations of America had lost sight of what it meant to be a republic. Like, can we all sit here and say that people have an understanding of what it means to be a member of our society, to be a member of to be a good citizen? I don't think most people do. I think most people have no idea. It's like, just like we said, how do you change a law at the local level? I don't know. I want the FCC to do it. Well, that's an unacceptable answer. More government to fix too much government is not an acceptable answer for an American citizen, let alone a libertarian, because that's in direct opposition to the founding of this country and to the ideals of this country. And you violate those rules when you don't know what the rules are. And like the social contract, we go back to the social contract, yes. You look at the as we talked about in the last episode, chastity as an institution. Forced chastity is wrong. But there's nothing wrong with choosing chastity as a lifestyle. When you say, I would rather get to know people on an intimate level emotionally as opposed to sexually, like Aziz Ansari's first goal is to warm her up enough to sleep with her. Well, look at what the result was. You know, an article in some trashy blog mm-hmm. that basically threatens your career. Well, if you had built some trust with the woman first and used some of the rules that we used to adhere to when it came to the institution of sex, and it's when you say everybody has to be chaste. Well, that's not cool. people should be able to make the decision for themselves.
Yeah, just stop telling people what to do.
Right.
Like, you know, but let people live their lives the way they want.
But in the effort to break the norm of forced chastity, we started promoting promiscuity, which hasn't worked out for anybody. Well, maybe for Creighton, but not for Galt and I. But you know what I mean? Like, there are even those cultural institutions that at a certain point, like, you have to start going, okay, this is why everybody's so uncomfortable, is because we're changing so many political, societal, cultural, economic norms all at once in the age of the internet that everybody's going too much, too much, too much, too much. And when that happens, you get swings back and forth. And you get a Trump on the heels of an Obama. So then you get a Bernie Sanders, and then that swings back to, like, I don't know what the – I don't even want to think, like, who's further right than Trump.
Well, I mean, frankly, like, Trump's – I mean, people think of Trump, you know, do they think of conservative politics or do they think of, like, assholery?
Right.
Like, I mean, yeah, you could argue that his biggest thing is immigration and that he has probably a typically – Republican/conservative immigration platform,
mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most political issue that comes to mind with people: build the wall and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
But I think when people think of him, they don't necessarily think of conservative politics. They think of his assholeness, what he says, and whether or not he's a closet racist,
mm-hmm.
Which comes back to what he says mostly. But like as far as like conservative, traditionally conservative political platforms. You know, I don't think from my perception, I don't think people perceive him as being that. They don't. Maybe what they perceive is that he represents conservatism, and therefore all of this old stuff that was considered traditionally conservative is now. Well, it must be what Trump believes. So old-style conservatism is, well, that's what Trump is. So
I just have a hard time believing anybody who thinks, considers Trump ideological in any way.
Yeah, I don't...
There's nothing to me about him that screams, I've read a book.
Yeah, he's first and foremost a businessman, and that's how he's approached everything. And he's realized his niche is to... you know, say whatever's on his mind at any given moment, and people eat it up. And frankly, that fire is fueled in a large part by the media, who he knows. I mean, he's probably not like the most book smart president we've ever had, but he's not dumb either. He knows that when he says something on Twitter that's going to play to his base, that the left is going to throw that out there. They're going to play this, you know, on loop over and over. The left is going to get all in a huff and puff about it, and it's going to cause all of this stuff to happen. He knows that the media eats that crap up. So, like, the left is a little bit to blame for this as well. It's like they're giving him this platform. They're you know, well, it's the president. The words of the president matters. And it's like, yeah, but he's kind of a different animal in that regard. Like, he doesn't choose his words carefully all of the time. So when he does say something shocking, it is shocking. He just literally just says everything all of the time, so it gives what he says less meaning, I think, in a way that a normal president wouldn't be able to get away with. And but, so they just throw it out there.
Makes what he says more genuine.
Maybe
because he's not thinking about it; he's just saying it.
Maybe
if that's your idea. I think
that's what a lot of people see.
I think that's
is
a lot.
That he's genuine.
No, I completely agree. I do think a lot of, especially the people that support him, they believe wholeheartedly that he's just speaking from the heart, and they find it refreshing.
And he cares about America, and he cares about our jobs, and he cares about our economy, and that's what he's going to do.
I completely believe that a lot of people, that's what they think about him. I am not convinced that he is not choosing his words carefully. I think that he is a little bit smarter than I gave him credit for in that regard.
Right.
And he's actually, he knows what he's saying before he says it, except Covfefe.
I think I've read that it's not him that's actually typing out what he's tweeting. I mean, he's sending his thoughts over to a communications guy. I think it's Dan Scavino, and he's the one actually pushing the Twitter buttons. I mean, so yeah, there is some level of...
I want that fact checked.
New York Times, Maggie Haberman, Glenn Thrush about 2 months ago, that was in their article where he was sending, I mean, he probably does tweet out, but he's sending stuff to, he's literally picking up the phone and dictating to Scafino what he once tweeted most of the time. So I agree that I think he is more calculating than most people give him credit for. Because he's manipulating the media. I think he is a genius when it comes to media manipulation and getting attention.
Oh, he like, completely shattered every single kind of thing that involved the media from his presidential campaign onwards.
Right.
I mean, he took every, and I said this before on this show and just in general, that he took a lot of the wind out of the sails of many of the silencing techniques that media, particularly liberal media, has used. You know, the race card, most specifically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it used to be if you got called a racist, then, you know, you had to defend yourself and you had to basically prove that you weren't.
Ron Paul.
Forever. Like, you had to prove that you weren't before you could make any movement forward.
Right.
What does he do? He shows a picture of him eating a taco. And he says, Taco Bowl. And he says, I love the Hispanics.
On Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah. I mean, we laugh about that, but
he's
like,
a troll.
But the fact is that worked. Like, after that, no one was like cared about it. He completely changed it, and you know, maybe he's the only one who can do that. But when it comes to media, yeah, he is. There's a lot to learn if you're trying to be like. He is basically a shock jock president. Is what he is.
He's had 10,000 hours at it. I mean, this has been his whole life. He used to call the Post and represent himself as his media guy. I mean, he I think he is the only one that can get away with it. I think you saw Roy Moore try it, but Roy Moore is fundamentally unlikable.
Yeah, but the fact that he also tried to have sex with a 4, he did, or whatever, with a 14 or 17, whatever it was, that's, Trump says some weird incestuous stuff, but I don't think he's ever, been like, yeah, I'd do a 14-year-old.
Right. I mean,
now you just did. Cut that.
No. Like, Stormy Daniels, nobody's even flinching at this. It's fascinating to me where you have this porn star who's going to probably tomorrow release this 5,000-word story in In Touch magazine where she describes her 2006 tryst with the president and gives graphic details about his junk and, you know, that
but
he
why
basically.
Why would that work if the video of him saying to that woman, the interview, like, when you're me, you can do whatever you want with girls, you can grab them. Like, why, if that didn't work?
That's what a lot of people on the left and in the media don't get. This kind of stuff was priced into the purchase of Donald Trump when we elected him president,
right,
like, as a nation. Like, everybody knows he's a grotesque figure morally. Like, there's nothing about Donald Trump that I look and I go, this is a man that I want to emulate. You know, I mean, even his children, yes, they're great, but they're also there's a weird relationship there, and from all accounts, it's very transactional. You know, and he tells Stormy Daniels, "You're perfect like my daughter," you know, or something along those lines. Weird and pervy, like he's just a grotesque figure, and I think people are having a hard time distinguishing between Trump and the Trump administration. And I think you can look at what is coming out of the Trump administration and each policy individually and go, like this, don't like this, this needs work, like this, don't like this, and while still not liking the man. Like, there's nothing about Donald Trump that I like. I laugh at him because I no longer take him seriously. He's broken the mos maiorum. Like, in the beginning of the Trump stuff, that's what was outrageous to me. Is the threat to the breaking of the norms. But we're here now. Like, you can't go back. You can't put this genie back in the bottle. Like,
What of his policies that he's passed that make you dislike him so much as a president?
I think his foreign policy is exactly like
Jeff
Bush.
Jeff Sessions alone is enough.
And wasn't Bush just like Obama's?
It's exactly so right. But
So the status quo, let's look at things he's done differently.
Well, I think I'm a libertarian.
What things has he done differently that from the last president that you dislike that are changes from the status quo?
Jeff Sessions.
I dislike the status quo. I expected Donald Trump not to be status quo. So I'm a libertarian.
He's not. He's not status quo. There's lots of things that he's done and changed. That's what I'm trying to get at. And there's not one of them that you can name that you don't like.
I'm saying if I were pro status quo, I would be a full Tommy Lauren and just say whatever dumb shit will get me hits.
Donald Trump's arguably the most libertarian president we've ever had.
No, I disagree.
Not ever had,
yes.
But in the modern era,
because,
yes.
Because of his actual actions are actually not as wide and. And, you know, he says a lot of stuff, but, like, you know, Jeff Sessions is a bad.
Abysmal.
Bad.
So those tax cuts were no big deal.
The tax reform, but that's not him.
He didn't do it through the right channels. That's been
Republican Congress has been wanting to do that since at least Reagan.
Right.
So they finally did it. And I love it. I mean, tax cuts, all for that. The regulation thing was good. I'm really a big fan of that.
What about the justices?
That's good too for the most part. I mean, but some of the justices
are all these not things that we like.
Yes,
but you despise
the man. You see him as evil.
Now listen, Galt. If you give
just,
us,
I'm
if,
lost
if
here.
You,
I don't. I,
if you give us a chance,
because it's not,
we're going to agree with you. Shut up.
Let's also not forget that the things that he hasn't succeeded yet on that he wants to succeed are also really. I really can't reiterate enough how bad Jeff Sessions is. But like anything that involves him and immigration, whenever he actually makes progress on immigration that's going to be a nightmare. Like that's going to be from a libertarian perspective and just a humanitarian perspective, it's going to be the worst thing.
I thought infrastructure would be bad too, but how are we paying for it? What? By the most libertarian way of funding infrastructure ever.
All right,
cutting aid to Pakistan. We're funding our infrastructure by cutting foreign aid.
Okay. And then
that's the most libertarian answer you could have to paying for our roads.
Yes, but then he's handing the contracts to monopolistic, quote-unquote, free market. I mean, there's a lot of what Trump quote-unquote.
You want it to be a lottery?
But hold on.
We've also only had a year.
We've always done that, though. We've always picked who does our contracts.
Right, but Trump is...
Government's still a company.
Trump's policies are traditional Republican policies because Jared Kushner is working with Paul Ryan, is working with John Kelly, is working with Mitch McConnell to get stuff done. And so a lot of what you're going to like about the Trump administration is what we would like if any other Republican had been president.
And also,
I've seen work with Rand Paul.
I agree with that.
I'm not going to lie.
But he's still going to sign Section 702 being reauthorized without Rand Paul even getting as much of a single change in it. So while he takes him, quote-unquote, seriously, he doesn't do shit for him. So
I don't feel like it's... off base to say that much of my dislike for Donald Trump comes from the people who are his avid supporters. I know those kinds of people and I don't like them.
Yeah.
Like they're bad people.
No, they're not.
Yes, they
are.
I have talked to a person like an actual alt-righter.
You just talked all about individualism. You're going to stand there and then generalize all Trump supporters as hate. That you hate?
No,
them.
I don't think he said
not
all
Trump supporters. I'm talking about specifically his most fervent supporters, the alt-right style people. I have talked with them,
the deplorables.
Debated with them. They're not good people.
They're deplorable to you.
Yes, they're not good people. They are straight up racists.
I think that if you like Trump, there's a difference between
Trump's base is not racist.
Okay,
I'm not saying
he could not win.
I will not.
He couldn't listen. If you want to let me finish my statement, he would not have been able to win the presidency with more than just one faction of people in this country. It's not possible. If you're going to be president, you have to have more than one group of people
vote
for you.
Thanks for the most obvious statement of the year,
okay.
Creighton.
My point is that I'm not generalizing about the entire country. I'm or his entire base. I'm generalizing about the specific ones, and everyone knows the types of people that I'm referring to.
The people that didn't make a change in the election.
The 18% of the electorate.
18% of the electorate is racist.
Yes.
Have you talked with somebody who is like an actual alt-right person in like a one-to-one conversation
yeah,
about their ideas?
Yeah, there aren't very many of
them. No, that's not true.
There are not 18% of our country is alt-right racists.
I will give you the password to my Facebook and you can have a conversation with several of these people. There are people out there, and I talked about this last time. The people that drive me nuts, that would have they would have more credibility if at least one time they went, I don't like that. Or that was a bad misstep by Donald Trump. But the MAGA people who just every single thing that Donald Trump does is great, and if you don't like it, you're a snowflake. Those are the people that he's talking about. Those are the people that are obnoxious. And they're just as bad as the people who are sitting there crying tears of rage because they're wearing their She Persisted t-shirt.
Is that 17% too?
Absolutely. I think there's absolutely...
So 40%... Almost half of our country
of the
crybabies are racists.
Of the electorate.
Right.
If you self-identify as an alt-right person, or if I read off a bunch of alt-right positions that weren't like, that didn't use strong shock words, but they were like, if somebody was trying to promote themselves to somebody and they were alt-right, what words would they use? If I read that off to a person, if you're an alt-right person or you support those kinds of positions, then I have no problem calling you a racist. And those people voted for Trump. They didn't vote for Clinton, and they did not vote.
What does
they
that
voted
have
for
to
Trump.
Do with Trump?
Those types of
he
people.
Didn't call out those
yeah,
people.
But that's not my point. Those types of people make me not like the man. You can call that a logical fallacy, but that is a reason
he's an
I don't
individual.
Like him.
You can't judge him based off the actions and beliefs.
You can
of
totally
others.
Judge a person by the friends they keep.
Those are not his friends.
No, whatever.
Because they voted for him.
That's all politics is
that,
who is
yeah,
who, what
politics
groups are you
is
in?
Getting groups of people that aren't your friends to vote for you.
No, that's
and make
that,
them
that,
believe that
no,
you're your friends.
Running for president is getting the is getting groups who I to in America at least
he did it.
Is getting groups various groups of people who
he's
kind of
winner.
Agree with you to vote for you.
He's a winner.
Are you tired of winning yet, Galt?
I mean, I know what you're doing now.
This is why people love.
I just think that's a bit ridiculous.
I don't at all.
I agree with them.
Yeah,
I don't. I mean, when push comes to shove, everybody's defined by their own actions as individuals. But I can totally say that you have specific ideas, you may be an alt-right person, and maybe you're also an honorable father who takes their kids to soccer practice and all that kind of stuff.
You might be an individual. Those
honorable traits that everyone has, that's fine. But I don't have to like you because of that, because you also don't like black people and think that they're sub-Saharan Africans are lesser human beings. Like, they literally biologically are worse. Like, these are the kinds of things that alt-right people believe. It's old-fashioned, old-timey 1800s racism. It's not 1950s, you shouldn't sit at the lunch counter racism. It's old-school stuff that they support. And, you know, that is enough.
1%.
That is enough for me to say to you, I don't care about all your other positive traits. That trait by itself is enough that I don't like you.
17% of the electorate do not believe that.
I would agree that it's not 17%, but it's definitely not 1%. Let's split it at 9.
What?
I
mean, I don't know the numbers.
Were you on the internet? Did you not see how many people said, "Yeah, Haiti is a shithole because it's run by black people"? Like, I saw that. Like, that exists.
And I see
out
just
there.
As many people on the other side doing it too.
I agree with you.
There are just as many people that are making logical arguments and having real debates.
Two things can be true at the same time.
I'm not saying all Republicans are like this, and I'm not saying that all the people who voted for Trump
man because of what 1% of his base voted for.
And he's saying
because they're all racist.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. He's saying it's ridiculous too, but it's how he feels.
I don't like Trump because a large portion of the people who voted for him are those types of people. It's not a minuscule percentage.
I know
it's not a trivial percentage. That's fine. But the fact that those people did it all, and that's a problem.
I am getting tired of him just because I'm getting tired of it all.
And I also am just sick of
it. Sound like the people that had a problem for people voting for Obama because he was black. That's what you sound like to me.
It's the same problem. You don't like Obama because you don't like that he was elected because he was black.
Yeah.
Because
he brought out a whole group of people.
I don't know if that was a substantial.
That voted for him because of the color of his skin.
That's
the only reason they voted for him.
No, no, no.
Not because of anything he believed in.
No, no, no.
Not because they believed that their race was dominant and should rule the country.
That may be fine, but I think that you're overrepresenting the number of people who didn't like Obama specifically because.
But you're not overrepresenting the number of racist bigots in the country.
No.
Okay.
All right,
which is a position I've changed on. I think one thing that is definitely worth mentioning is that I used to be the kind of person who's like racist, actual racists were like a very small portion of this country, and in general people weren't. People still aren't. But I think that I have been convinced that the numbers are a lot higher than I had previously thought. I think one thing that Trump has done is allowed people who kept that stuff under their tongue to just open their mouths.
Yeah.
And that's something you could say, well, that's a good thing. And I do think from a perspective of having it out there, it is a good thing. I like the fact that people aren't just keeping it on, you know, they're wearing their hearts on their sleeves now.
I agree. I mean, I had a lot of friends. A lot of these libertarian brutalist groups that I was in where you...
Chris Cantwell.
The 1%.
By the way.
Right. Libertarian brutalist groups are 1%. Alt-right groups are 1%.
Can I finish?
You're just throwing out a number.
There's nothing.
So anyways, my point...
They don't decide elections.
I'm about to agree with you if you don't shut up. If you keep talking, I'm not going to agree with you. I'm going to fight with you. I'm about to agree with you and make your point. You had a lot of these guys in these libertarian brutalism groups where it's my free speech, it's my right to say that Jews make Jew jokes and anti-Semitic jokes, and I'm just kidding, and if you don't like the fact that I'm making a joke, you're a snowflake. A year later, those people were like, listen, everybody knows it, the Jews rule the world and we need to have a second Holocaust. Are you joking? No! It did free them, but it's good because then you can see their true colors.
Charlottesville happened.
Like, right.
That happened. That wasn't an insignificant event.
But
weren't thousands of people.
But there also wasn't there also wasn't like three dudes within a Klan outfit with a sign.
Pretty much was three dudes.
But there
no,
wasn't
thing.
Three dudes
that organized it. Yes,
maybe
the organizers.
But you know,
what three people can organize. We had thousands of people came to see Gary.
Yeah, but
three people did that.
you're gonna
three people.
Are you gonna sit there?
We had a bigger rally for Gary Johnson who got 1%.
Listen, are you
than the white nationalists?
Listen,
did.
Are you gonna sit there and tell me that
in history their biggest prime in all of history?
You know how he is.
Are you gonna sit there and tell me that who went to Charlottesville and held up torches only went because someone asked them to, not because they actually agreed with the sentiment?
I do totally agree with Galt that we in the middle are caught between what seems like a very small percentage of the left and the right,
It's also worth mentioning in politics, extremes have a big impact.
Yeah.
If it wasn't true, then gay people would have absolutely no progress in this country on anything.
Right.
Extremes matter a lot more than they do in real life because not everybody goes out and votes. Not even everybody's registered to vote. So the extremes make a big difference. So in politics, while in the general population, the amount of racists that are like, the alt-right style racist may be small in the general population, but politically they have a significant effect because they show up.
On the way to Thanksgiving, my dad said, yeah, I was going to get a Confederate flag. I go,
oh, cool.
What? my dad has never been, he's not a racist. He's not somebody that is, he probably knows nothing about the Civil War. Like, we have no connection to the South. It's just that he sees the way that this small minority is being treated, and he reacts. And then his girlfriend is like, well, I'm getting a gay flag, and we have to hang it next to it, a rainbow flag. And so she's reacting to that extreme. And then that's what he's talking about, is that you just get these people, everybody who just gets caught in the middle, and it's just like this terrible place to be. But I don't know that, you know, Donald, like, it was happening when Obama was president, and he's a pretty mellow dude.
Yeah.
And then you have Trump. I mean, if you have Elizabeth Warren, it's just going to be the other way. It's not really going to stop. I mean, this identity politics is here to stay, I think. But I think if you go back to the question of, is Trump a libertarian president? I would have to say fundamentally, Donald Trump is not a libertarian. I don't think that Donald Trump is a conservative. I don't think that Donald Trump is anything. I think that Donald Trump is somebody who is I think this quality that has kind of shown up in the last couple of weeks and was outlined in the Michael Wolff book, that the last person that talked to him is what he believes. And I've met people like that.
He might be.
You know, where literally, like, in this immigration debate, it was Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin had a deal cut with him, and then Tom Cotton got a hold of him, and then he believed what Tom Cotton said, and then he literally is kind of like ping pong ball. And I think that's the scary proposition if you are a Trump supporter, if the House and the Senate over the next few years swing the other way and he starts cutting deals, I don't think you're going to see a libertarian president. And that's what I've always maintained is, yes, you can celebrate now that you have a libertarian-leaning presidency in a lot of ways in terms of economics and regulation and courts.
Because we do.
We do, but what happens when the Senate is controlled by Democrats and he wants to get his nominees passed? He's going to start putting moderates on.
Which is why we wanted to elect Ron or Rand, because they have principles.
They have principles.
And that's the difference. Because you can still have libertarian policies that Trump's passed. I said most libertarian because we've never had a libertarian president.
Yeah. I mean, it is... If you're saying, is he a better choice than Hillary Clinton? Yeah, because Hillary Clinton, like, that's the problem with Democrats.
He's a better choice than a long list of former presidents.
Yeah, if you're talking about Hillary Clinton, who is a big government socialist, wants to invade other countries, is socially left, there's nothing that I agree with her on. But, like, at least Donald Trump can have people who are on the right persuade him of a certain way of thinking. And you can get two regulations cut for everyone passed, and you can get Gorsuch, who was, you know, writing for Cato at one point, the Cato Institute. You can get some of these little libertarian wins, but does that mean that you're going to have a full libertarian presidency? Not at all, because
you have
someone who at their core is incompetent, does not have the ability to understand what the job entails, and is highly persuadable. For as all the talk of him being a great deal maker, he's not. He's kind of like the ping pong ball in the room if you read the reports of this immigration debate that's going on right now. Like, he's not a decision maker. Because he doesn't understand the facts, because he doesn't have an ideology and because he's inexperienced.
He doesn't understand the mechanics of politics. Right. He understands the mechanics of business.
He has to rely on people that he trusts, and those people are taking advantage of him and, as a result, us. And that's why he should have never been president in the first place, because he is highly persuadable, because he doesn't understand what a clean bill is. Like, you listen to that, he doesn't understand how any of this process works. He's just being told what to do by, like, Mike Pence. And Mike Pence, we all know from living in Indiana, is eminently incompetent. Like, a President Pence will be, you'll pine for George Bush.
You know what? If it turns out that any of these Democrat attacks stick and he gets impeached, I just want everybody to remember that a couple years ago I said in the 2016 election, Mike Pence was the dark horse.
Yeah. So he's not going to get impeached, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to read this news. apparently there's a memo going around in Congress right now that it's classified, so it's not released yet. But the facts contained are jaw-dropping.
Now, where are you reading this from? What's the source?
This is from Matt Gaetz, Republican of the House.
Okay.
This is from his congressional website, United States Congressman.
Okay.
Is this
representing
the
first district of Florida?
Okay.
No.
Formerly represented by Joe Scarborough. What'd you say, Creighton?
There's a money laundering thing going around that I saw before I got at the gym.
Yeah, yeah. It involves, there's a couple different situations. Like, a lot of people think that Trump didn't release his tax returns because he has had investment from Russian banks. Like, Trump, in terms of businessmen, is kind of on the trashy side, like, surprise, surprise. And those guys will a lot of times take Russian investment to buy properties, and then they will launder the money through the real estate investment, and that's why New York real estate's so high. And one of the things that they're looking at is, did the NRA take Russian money in some various form and then donate that to the Trump campaign? So that's where that comes from. But now he's saying, this Republican congressman is saying what, Gold?
Yeah, that there's a 4-page memo circulating Congress right now that shows the government, the FBI, and the Department of Justice's surveillance abuses. And it's quote, shocking, troubling, and disturbing. He's saying part of him wishes he didn't read it, and that there's no higher priority than to release this to preserve our democracy.
Yee. Which hyperbole from a congressman is like getting shit from a horse. So, but still.
No, I mean, it'd be shocking if it wasn't shocking.
It's kind of like when Massey said, though, the world will never recover from the redacted pages of the 9/11 report, and then it just told us what we already knew. Nobody really cared that Saudi Arabia was involved in 9/11. Like,
mm-hmm.
So
they're saying this is going to make, they're going to drop the Mueller investigation. It's going to blow it wide open. It's all over.
Even if it's true or not, the Republicans will use that as leverage.
Like, yeah, Trump's clean.
But see, here's part of the, this
well,
goes back
clean
to,
as you can be.
This is what goes back to Trump not being prepared for the job, where he tweets in an afternoon, you know, this FISA reauthorization bill is lousy because that's what they used to spy on me. And then 2 hours later is saying, get smart, we need to sign this bill and get 702 passed. And it's laughable because you can't, he's saying two things. He clearly doesn't understand the process. And FISA 702 was passed by the House and the Senate. And essentially what Section 702 of the FISA bill is, it was passed in 2008. And essentially it isn't the part that collects all the data. It isn't the part that authorizes all the data collection. It creates a system for checking various databases to access all the data that's collected. So the government claims that they only collect metadata. That's absolutely false. They collect, especially overseas, every type of content, and they put it into, you know, NSA databases where the various agencies, the 17 intelligence agencies, access this data. And what 702 does, it's sunsetted for 6 years now, according to the bill that Trump will inevitably sign. And it's sunset as part of the check and balance. And the intelligence community has said this is 25% of everything we know about terrorists. It's the crown jewel of how we track terrorist movement. Yes, we understand that American data sometimes gets caught in these searches, but we do what we can. And so here's the philosophical question. Do you think that the government should be collecting all of the information or not? And then how do you want them to operate with that information? In all my research, I can tell you that they seem to have a fairly stringent process of checking the data. So, for instance, someone shoots up a Turkish nightclub. This is an example that that was given on the Lawfare podcast, one of the FBI agents talking about it. This guy shoots up a nightclub. We get his identity. We go in. We do an about search. We put in his name. We then find a wealth of information based on all of the data that is collected through all of the collection that we do. And then we can start tracking different hops, different connections. So, you know, they find his email and they read through his email, and then they go to his cell phone and they go to through videos and they find various connections. Why did he make this decision? And when you do these about searches, you inevitably find Americans, because let's say we're doing show prep for Section 702 and Chris Galt is in London, and, you know, or Glenn Greenwald, who's in Brazil, and I are communicating about Section 702, and I'm getting information from him for my podcast, and Galt is on the email in London. Because they're overseas, they have the legal authority to collect all of that data. And even though we are American citizens, and I'm an American citizen, if they're targeting Glenn Greenwald and watching him, then my data is caught up. They don't need a warrant to read that email, which libertarians fundamentally believe is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. You must get a warrant before you search the data of any American citizen. Section 702 says that they don't need a warrant, and the government argues that it's a reasonable search. We don't just go through people's data looking for crimes, which by all accounts and all the research I did is true, but we're taking their word.
But they have to provide no evidence of.
Well,
and,
so
and it all goes through a secret court.
No, so here's how. So let's say we have a terrorist suspect. Okay, you're an FBI agent, you're in the CIA, and I'm in the NSA, and we have one of the Tsarnaev brothers. Mm-hmm. They were turned down for the Tsarnaev brothers because they were American citizens, or they were Americans under whatever the laws that they've crafted in these courts. So, like, they couldn't go and look at all the searches that the Tsarnaev brothers were Googling because they were in America. But when they were overseas in Russia, then they could there, okay? So you and I have a terrorist suspect. What you have to do is you have to write up a report, which Michael Hayden and I've posted all these videos and a bunch of different links and stuff at WALpolitics.com. There was a great debate between one of the Snowden journalists from the Washington Post and Michael Hayden. It's about 2 hours long where they're basically going back and forth about this program. Really interesting. And so Michael Hayden says, what you have to give to the FISA court is about the size of the Cincinnati phone book. And it has to be extremely detailed why you're getting this information, what you're going to use it for, why are they being targeted. And it goes to a FISA judge who's appointed by the Chief Justice. These FISA courts are across the nation. And yes, it's all secret. So they say if it were public, then, you know, ISIS could watch who was getting searched or not. So we need privacy in these searches. And the judge, they almost never reject any of these, because one of the criticisms is they're never rejected. Well, Hayden says it's more of a working process. And so if they aren't going to approve it, they'd say, here's what you need to change, which, good or bad, that's the process. I mean, you can look at that and go, well, the check and balance is the secret judge, and they're acting as a buddy friend, mm-hmm. when the very criticism of these FISA courts is that there is no check or balance. There isn't anybody saying, no, you can't do this. And so one of the thoughts is that Michael the NSA director that lied to the FBI that got fired, Michael Flynn. Mm-hmm. He was working with Turks and consulting with them. He was working with Russians. He was being targeted through some of these programs to see what he was doing, even though he was an American citizen. He was working with foreign governments, and they were claiming to monitor the other side of the call and the Kislyak calls. Mm-hmm. And then that information was used for political purposes, which all of this is what libertarians have been saying. We were saying in 2012. You say now this is only used for Muslims in Yemen, but what happens 20 years down the road when we're using it for political purposes? And that's where we're already getting, you know, 4 years, yep. eight years down the road.
We just haven't known about it.
We haven't known about it.
We're now learning about it.
It's the fundamental, right. the fundamental libertarian that everybody always gives us crap for using this all. But it's the danger of power.
Right.
It's like, you know, this is a power. Well, we're using it well. Like, it's not always going to be used well.
Right.
And once you've made, it's, you know, the free speech argument. Like, you censor one speech that you don't like, you've given free rein to censor any kind of speech. You know, if you give the government a power to do this, even though they may be doing it well now in its infancy or whatever, you know, it's only a matter of time. It really is only a matter of time before it gets abused.
Yeah.
It will happen. There's nothing that you're going to be able to do to stop it from happening except getting rid of the power.
And Admiral Rogers, who is head of the NSA's Section 702 program, was speaking at the Heritage Foundation, and he's like, listen, we tell on ourselves. Whenever we make a mistake, we tell, you know, oversight committees, we tell judges, we have this whole process of when we do something wrong. It's like, okay, well, you seem trustworthy. You seem like a trustworthy guy, and you seem honorable, but so do Michael Flynn. And it turns out he's a total liar. He's a total dirtbag, you know. And just because you have just because you make transparency a priority, and what they all argue from the FBI to the CIA to the NSA is that transparency is a priority because this is such they've said this is the crown jewel. This is where they get the most of their information. This is the thing that is keeping America. This is the thing that has kept America from getting attacked again, is what they say. And so they don't want to jeopardize the tool. So the incentive of transparency within the regime that they've set up of checks and balances, they follow to the T because they don't want to jeopardize the tool, because they know they're under such scrutiny that they could have it canceled at any moment. Which I find to be a valid argument, but still
where's the authority? Where's the authority come from for this?
The authority was just written by the Bush administration and put. It was started under the Patriot Act, and then they started collecting all of this information. The Patriot Act, which was partially written by Vice President Pence. So the Patriot Act outlined all this.
When do we get to say we told you so?
Right, about now. And so they started collecting all the metadata under PRISM and all the stuff that Snowden exposed, and they were having a tough time actually going through the data because now they have the haystack gets too big, and so it was Palantir. I think it's Palantir Technologies, which is owned by Peter Thiel, started by Peter Thiel, great libertarian hope that he is, co-founder of PayPal, investor in Lyft, advisor to Trump, Gawker killer. you know, he started this company with an investment from InQtel, which is the seed company from the CIA. And so Palantir Technologies basically went through and created the ability to go and search all of this metadata. So you have people who are hackers, who work in Silicon Valley, who are 24.
Who have access to all this
who
data.
Who have access to literally all this data. And so there's
In my eyes, illegal data.
And, yeah, I mean, they're literally every email. This podcast is on an NSA, CIA, U.S. thing,
Creighton
essentially.
Fears have come true. His name's on a list.
So
he tried so hard.
They have offshore of Britain. Europe basically said, hey, are you going through all our stuff? And we were like, nah. And then it came out that we were, like, spying on Merkel and all of her email. And so a collaboration was set up, and we have this big NSA thing off the off of England that basically collects everything over on that side of the Atlantic. So it's really robust. But Trump was against it before he was for it. Now he's going to sign it. And
have you seen Trump versus Trump on Reddit?
No, no,
it's,
but
it's just him contradicting himself over and over again.
It's like Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro every day has good Trump.
Because when
Trump.
You don't have principles, that's what you do. You make decisions on a whim for
right.
for gain, for economic gain or political gain or something.
Right.
As long as you're getting something out of it, that it can change your mind. You're
I
never,
think an important thing
to
point out about this issue is that this does split. Or this does not split on party lines. Like it, there are groups within both parties that support it and are against it. And I think if anyone, if anyone is trying to say, here's another reason that Trump's bad is because he supports this. Like, you know, here's another reason Republicans are bad because they support this. It's like that's this on this issue in particular. That's an unfair critique. I mean, you don't have to go any further than Ron Wyden and Rand Paul and the other senators. I think it was three Democrats, two Republicans that put forth the amendment that did not pass that would have required a warrant to get all of this information. And then Justin Amash had the same. And I don't know who else co-sponsored in the House.
Which their argument is that it will take too long. Like, you're talking about maybe less than 24 hours. It's like, well, it's life and death. Well, we don't know that for sure because you're not giving us proof that that's the case.
Right. And these amendments were pushed by I would argue that the Amash amendment was probably his baby. And because the last time that they tried this, he also put forth an amendment to make there be a warrant and only failed by like, what, 10 votes or something like that? Really close. In the House, I would say that the Republican, a Republican, is the strongest voice for getting that amendment passed. In the Senate, it's probably more even. But the point I'm trying to make is that the leadership of both parties are the ones that got this pushed through without the amendment. Nancy Pelosi, in particular, made it a point to make sure that enough Democrat votes were whipped to make the amendment fail. So on this issue, it's important to take a perspective that cannot be partisan because it is not partisan. It is an authoritarian versus anti-authoritarian split, and I think it's important when you're judging this issue, you have to bear that in mind. And you know, for our listeners, that's probably not a problem. Like, we judge everything, you know, whether and we don't care what party you're part of. We just kind of look at where you're
right
following the issue. But that's not true in general, especially not nowadays with the general population.
It is interesting to see people who like Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi, who think he's literal Hitler. Donald Trump is literal Hitler, but we should give him the ability to spy on Americans without a warrant. Like, if you really believe that, wouldn't you not vote for this? Wouldn't you do everything you possibly can to stall the tyrant, the dictator Trump, from having these powers? Like, so either you don't believe what you're saying and that he's a literal dictator, or and you're just being hyperbolic, or you want the powers yourself, which those are two troubling instincts.
Yeah, that argument, you would hope that argument would work, but if it didn't work when we were talking about, that may not be fair, but if it didn't work when we're talking about Obama getting certain authorities.
Yeah. No, we made the same argument.
We made the same argument, and then, you know, it got brushed off, and now, like, well, if it didn't work then, why would it work now? It's like, oh, you know, you don't, I want to say vindicating that, at least in the past year, how many times on Reddit, but just in general, I've seen, you know, these are look at Trump doing this and this, and like, you know, that's something that Obama did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we warn you, if you're gonna get a president you don't like, he's gonna have these same powers. And you know, people don't think long term about this stuff. They think about the immediate effects and that's it. It stops there. They don't look at ripples.
Just title this episode, I Told You So.
I can't wait for 5 years from now when we are again together.
Yeah, we'll
and
do
we're
it
talk,
again.
Talking about the president, The Rock.
And they'll be making the same mistakes.
And we'll be saying the same things 5 years from now. And then Malia Obama after that, 5 years down that road.
Right.
So,
hey, right. Gates said that the Trump investigation is a sham.
It's a sham, is
after
it?
After reading that memo.
Christy Avery wants us to end the show, so we're going to give her her wish. We're going to start wrapping up.
So we've got wrap up, so we got another hour then?
Creighton talked too much. I'm bored, Christy. She's falling asleep.
See, this is what... All right. I want to have Galt on more often because Galt is radio gold because he's just combative and creates drama wherever he goes. But I also have to think about the other co-hosts.
Yeah. You got to think about your show. Don't worry about the co-hosts. They'll make it back.
I'd stay here all night.
The show loves the drama.
I don't have anything to do tomorrow.
You guys are... You're going east.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys want to come back next Thursday?
Yeah.
Are you available?
As of right now, I am. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you find anything better to do.
No, I won't. I'm
still swiping right on Tinder and
I'm finishing up working my part-time job to make sure I can pay the last round of bills before I leave. So
yeah, because
I don't have that schedule yet for Thursday, but probably will be free.
Life is about to get real busy, real expensive.
Yeah.
Mm.
You want to talk about what you're doing?
I just am going to work for a software engineer in New York City.
Ah, very good. New York City.
Yeah.
Where are you going to live? Do you know?
It's working on it right now. But in Manhattan, more than likely.
Did you ever think you'd live in a place more expensive than Alexandria, Virginia?
No. This is way more expensive than Alexandria, Virginia.
So we're excited to have a New York City correspondent.
Yeah.
That's nice.
We said that for the DC when I went out to DC, and then I only had like one episode when I was out there.
Well, we Skyped you in, but you were still like, you weren't immature. You just didn't care. Like you still don't care.
Still doesn't care.
But at least you're like more grown up, so like you pretend better
yeah.
that you don't care. He never really cared.
All the world's a stage,
right? All right, let's start wrapping up. Final thoughts, Chris Galt.
I don't know. We'll do this again next week.
Oh, wait. No,
send
we
us
do.
Send some stuff in that wait, you want us
I
to
do,
grade
we
to
do
talk
have
about.
An important topic that we need to talk about. Chris Spangle has watched all of the Star Wars. What did you think?
Oh.
That's right. I have now consumed
all of them.
All of the
Did
Star
you see
Wars.
The Last Jedi as well?
No, not yet.
Dude, God.
So I watched Rogue One because I saw it on Netflix, and I was like, you know what? I had seen two of the first three as a kid, I think. I remember seeing the first and the third.
Have to remember pod racing.
So I saw
the first and third as in episode 1 and 3 episode 4
No,
and
I saw A New Hope and Return of the Jedi because I remember
4 and 6 then. Yeah.
I remember the little Wookiees. The little
Ewoks.
The Ewoks.
Wookiees.
but I don't remember Empire Strikes Back at all. That was all very new to me. So I had a vague recollection of the third one. So I really had never watched any of them. So I started at
He's over 30, by the way.
So I watched Phantom Menace, or I watched Rogue One on Netflix. I was like, yeah, I'll try it out. This is probably about a month ago. And I'm going to have to watch it again now that I know what's going on because it didn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I told you, you can't start with episode 1.
Right.
You have to start
now,
at 4.
And you ranked it already.
And I
combated you about that movie, and it's because you haven't rewatched it since.
It was good.
You need to watch it again.
Here's what I liked about Rogue One is that it was exciting and kept my attention. Like, there was fighting in it, so it was good.
But you didn't get the story.
I got most of the story.
Because it linked two trilogies you'd never seen.
Having been a libertarian for over 10 years now, I know enough of the Star Wars mythology to, like, get the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the little Wookiees.
The little Wookiees. And so... Then I started with Phantom Menace because it was on Hulu, and so I watched the first. I started at Phantom Menace, and that was an abortion.
It's not.
That was not good.
Yeah,
It's not, and it's sad because there's so much potential. But it's one of those ones. There's actually documentaries about the making of that movie, and how when George Lucas watched the final cut, like after they've got it together, he sat down and he watched it. At the end, he's like, "Wow." Did some stuff there that I don't know how that's going to play. Like, it was like, even he was like, oh, crap. It was one of those things, like, you get to a certain point, you're like, this is going to work, it's going to work, and then you get it all shot, you get it together, you're like, well, you can't go back now and do it.
Well, here's the prequels all look like they were shot on Star Trek Voyager. Like, they all just had that, like, 90s now,
to be
fake
fair,
look.
Episode 3 is amazing.
Okay,
Revenge of the Sith is amazing.
It's a really good movie. And so I didn't like Phantom Menace, but it didn't really hold my attention. Attack of the Clones was good. There was some fighting in it. The storyline was okay. Then the Revenge of the Sith I thought was really good because there was a lot of political drama in it, and so that got me hooked on it.
And to me, that's what holds the prequel trilogy from being total garbage,
right,
is that there is this overarching political, like, you know, Palpatine's rise in the shadows.
Yes.
Like, that stuff, I like that. It happens in 1, it happens in 2,
right,
and it obviously happens in 3. And it keeps me, what makes the first two really bad is the acting,
yes,
and in times the dialogue. Like, George Lucas is not the greatest at dialogue. But Jar Jar Binks,
awful.
Hayden Christensen,
hate.
These guys, they just weren't the greatest of actors. And Jar Jar was just for kids. And that's what really bogs it down. But, like, if you can get past that and look at it from a different, look beyond that, there is some stuff in there that's worth liking. Liam Neeson, I love Liam Neeson's
character. He was great.
Character.
Oh. I thought the first three, the prequels, were going to be way worse than they actually were.
Yeah.
So because I just
heard so bad.
Because it's all, you know, because I'd heard
they're
hard.
They're not as bad as people.
No one hates Star Wars as much as Star Wars fans.
Right. And I've heard nothing but trash about all these movies.
Even the new ones, you hear the
right.
Everybody hates the new ones. And
so,
they're not bad.
So I watched A New Hope, great. Empire Strikes Back, not bad. I think Return of the Jedi was my favorite. And Empire Strikes Back was second. Then A New Hope, third.
Hmm.
Maybe it's a tight race on third and fourth between the first new one, where
Han Solo Awakens,
where Han Solo dies.
That's your favorite or your third favorite?
I'm gonna go 4 on that. No. Okay, here we go. Revenge of the Jedi.
Revenge of the Sith.
No.
Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi. Okay. Empire Strikes Back.
It's like pulling teeth.
Revenge of the Sith. Then New Hope, and then what's the first one? A Force Awakens.
Phantom Menace.
The Force Awakens is the seventh one,
right? And then we've got Attack of the Clones.
Uh-huh.
Rogue One.
Oh.
Rogue One is.
You thought Rogue One was worse.
Rogue
than
One's better than Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
Yeah. I know my favorite was Return of the Jedi because there was a lot of action. There was, like, I don't know, the part where there. I guess I watched the supercut because I got it from the library and they're all cheering because they all won.
Oh, the '97 even won.
And like that was. I'm sentimental. I'm like, yay!
Yeah.
We might win
they
over
added a happier ending.
We might end over globalists. But then I saw Hayden Christensen in him, and I'm like,
"Yeah, that's
what the fuck's going on here?"
Okay, that was the DVD, the Blu-ray re-release.
Yeah,
that wasn't originally Hayden Christensen. That was the actor who played Darth.
Oh, okay.
And they superimposed Hayden Christensen.
Well,
afterwards.
I knew that had to be the case because that's when I knew something fishy was up because I didn't know it had been redone.
It was
until
totally
then.
Unnecessary too.
Right.
Like, there's this debate about changes that George Lucas made that helped it. And then changes that hurt it.
Right.
But that change, it hurts it because it's completely unnecessary.
It completely threw
me
out.
Why would, after 30 years, he still look like Hayden Christensen?
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
It completely.
Because he's not alive.
Yeah, like.
He's a freaking robot anyway. Like.
It was such a great moment, and then it threw me out of it completely.
Yeah, it was like, it was just, it was unnecessary.
Like, put in, get the actor from Game of Thrones, who's the bald eunuch.
Barriss?
Hair, because he looks just like Darth Vader when he dies.
Oh, wow.
The worst was definitely Phantom Menace. I haven't seen Last Jedi.
Watch Rogue One again. That's probably my top three.
I like Rogue One's
in my top three.
I think Rogue One, to a lot of people that I've interacted with, is overrated.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. It's definitely better than, you know, Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
I liked it much better than Force Awakens.
But I didn't like how... my problem with Rogue One was, by the end of it, I didn't care about the characters like I should have.
I can't tell you any one of the characters. Like, I don't remember any of them.
Just,
I mean, like, it's a forgettable
movie.
That being said,
the battles, the large-scale battle scene in that is the best of any of them.
Man, I shed tears on that beach scene.
That was a great beach scene.
I didn't care about the main
especially
character.
Especially when Matt Damon
I didn't care about the main.
And Tom Hanks was taking care of him.
Oh, okay. The main two characters. I didn't care about the leads.
Right.
I honestly cared more about, what's-his-face, the general that died. Like, I cared more about him.
Right.
I thought he was awesome. Obviously, the Darth Vader scenes were fantastic. And that was just there. I mean, that's just always going to be great. But, like, honestly, what tore me up the most as far as characters dying was the Donnie Yen and his friend that were at the temple of the Kyber Crystal Temple.
Uh-huh.
Like, when they died on the beach, I was like, oh, man, they're all. But, like, when What's-Her-Face or Jaylen or Ursa or whatever, when she dies, I didn't really care about
I don't remember any of the people you're talking about. And so, like, to me, that makes it a lower movie. It's just that I don't. Really, I kind of have a vague awareness of it, of the plot, but I remember enjoying it and it keeping my attention. Like, I'm so ADD that, and I'm always doing two other things. Like, I'm watching TV while I'm on a device, while I'm reading.
You miss a lot of details.
Always. And
how many times have you watched Game of Thrones?
I tried when it first came out, and there was too many characters, and week to week it was too hard, and so I went back and rewatched it. A year ago in a binge form, and that's when I was like, this is fantastic. It's a show for binging. Like, if you're trying to keep up week to week,
yeah,
like, forget
that,
it.
It is definitely one of those.
So, but yeah, like, Revenge of the Sith and Return of the Jedi were the only two where I put everything down. I was like, holy shit. And in the new one. With
Force Awakens,
Force Awakens.
Yeah, you should see Last Jedi. I'm interested to see where you fall on it. I liked it.
Yeah,
to all of the listeners, Star Wars fan listeners, I am pro Last Jedi.
Yep.
I thought it was good. It's definitely, I think, one of those ones that in 10 years or whatever, after all of the dust has settled and people kind of accept it as being a movie that's happened, it's gonna. Because like right now they're like.
This third trilogy doesn't count.
Yeah, like,
it doesn't count.
Like, there's plenty. There are people out there. And
listen, criticism.
There was no third Matrix.
There's many different. I wish I could remember. It's like the seven hats or the six hats, and it's a business book, and it's like every team needs these hats, these seven hats, and there's a blue hat who's positivity, and the green hat who's innovation, and the white hat who's optimism, or like all these different hats, and then there's
that white hat's not Creighton,
and then there's the black hat who is always negative, always critical, and everybody wears the black hat because it's so critical. Like, it's so easy to be critical, and so mm-hmm. like when I see people just constantly being negative about stuff, like something like Star Wars, I go, it's easy to constantly hate Star Wars or constantly hate anything that's new or constantly hate Donald Trump. It's like, if you're always positive about Donald Trump and he never has done anything that you disagree with, then you're not a valid person to listen to.
Yeah, you're a racist.
Right. If you
According to Creighton.
Probably. And then if you like, I love the original three, but everything else sucks. It's like, then you're just not to be listened to. Like, right. Nobody likes you. You're probably a terrible person. Stop.
To me, I'd say. Honestly, I say my top is a tie between New Hope and Empire. That's my I am comfortable saying that that's a tie. I honestly like Revenge of the Sith more than Return of the Jedi, so that's probably my number three. And then probably Force Awakens. I don't know, Last Jedi, I don't know where that would be yet. I liked Last Jedi, though. I'm one of those guys. I think it's going to be considered one of the more important ones when at the end of the day, people are going to be like, this is one of the most important Star Wars. And honestly, and to all of those who are watching who have only seen Last Jedi once, go see it again and watch it without all of the with understanding the surprises that happen in the movie. Watch it again, and I think you'll like it more.
I loved how instead, like, all the previous Star Wars movies have always been light and dark was the theme, right? Right, Spangle?
Right.
It's like good and evil, right?
Yeah, it's Joseph Campbell's Man with a Thousand Faces.
The new movie touches on neutrality. that neutral.
Okay.
And I like that they dove into that real deep
area.
On both sides, the neutral.
Because that's where you start to build complexity in a story.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a book by Christopher Booker called The Seven Basic Plots, where it's just basically the seven plots of all of history. Joseph Campbell and who's the Kermit guy? Jordan Peterson kind of talks about this a lot too, the archetypes. You know, so story really can be distilled down to several parts. So you always have these basic formulas, and if you can break formula in a really creative way and kind of get into that gray area as opposed to, you know, Luke versus Darth, it's when Darth starts to get conflicted between Palpatine and Luke in Revenge and Return of the Jedi, that's what made it so great, is because that complication to the basic storyline, that's when you go, ooh. Yeah. All right, there's something
Redemption of the father through the son motif.
Well, because everybody has that within them. People aren't inherently, like, Donald Trump is not good or bad. Like, there are parts of him that are good and parts of him that are bad, and there are parts of him that just are nothing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and nobody has that ability to do critical thinking anymore. The book is six thinking hats. There's the white hat, neutral and objective, concerned with facts and figures. Red hat, the emotional view. Black hat, careful and cautious, the devil's advocate hat. Yellow hat, sunny and positive. Green hat, associated with fertile growth, creativity, and new ideas. Cool. Blue hat, cool, the color of the sky above everything
else. I'll
take
the green hat. I have some great new ideas about some show ideas.
All right.
Ooh, you guys don't want to hear it.
Do you watch Rick and Morty?
I've started the first one months ago.
I think you'd like, if you like Joseph Campbell,
uh-huh,
you'd like that show because Dan Harmon, the guy who one of the writers, he calls it the story circle, where he has basically he's basically put the Joseph Campbell monomyth kind of idea,
mm-hmm,
into a nice clean little circle where, like, here's phase one, phase two, phase three, and he does it every single episode of Rick and
Morty.
Except for the one that he doesn't like.
The Vindicators.
The Vindicators. He hates that. He hates that episode.
He doesn't follow his
circle. But every single episode follows the story circle.
Yeah. Interesting. I'll check it out. I've heard a lot
of
great things.
Have you seen Community,
about
the show?
I didn't like Community.
Oh, it's the same guy.
Yeah.
So you probably won't like Rick and Morty.
Well, it's not. It's Justin Roiland as well, and Justin Roiland's input is very, very prominent in the show.
The people that I agree with their content choices like Rick and Morty. People that I don't usually like Community. So maybe
both.
They're the same thing. One is with real people, one's with cartoons.
Okay.
Rick and Morty's, like, they, Rick and Morty's they
pull,
better, though.
They pull characters straight from Community and digitize them into Rick and Morty.
I would argue that
Beth is the same person from Community.
I would argue that, like, Rick and Morty tries to be a little bit more philosophical than Community does. I think Community plays on pop culture a lot more than Rick and Morty does. Rick and Morty there's, like, full-fledged, like, hour-long YouTube videos about people just breaking down the existentialist philosophy stuff.
I don't remember Community talking about Szechuan sauce. I'd say Rick and Morty's very big in pop culture.
I'm not saying that Rick and Morty doesn't reference pop culture. Good God. I'm saying that
can we end the episode real quick?
6 years and it's all the same. Oh, you got to punch him?
Good Lord.
Yes, I need to get out of this headset.
Regardless,
off.
My point is.
Oh, so funny.
Rick and Morty tries to have more in-depth philosophical stuff in it while doing it as a cartoon about a crazy mad scientist grandpa. So,
all right, final thoughts, Chris Gold.
Oh, I'm ready to go.
That is that is the most perfect final thought from him ever.
I'm ready to go. Creighton?
I don't know.
You used to end in, like, this really long quote from Jefferson or Washington. I don't know. You used to quote the...
Beer is what is...
Do you still have the...
Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. There you go. Ben Franklin quote.
Didn't you have the Emancipation memorized?
No.
What was it? Not the preamble. It was something else.
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, say it for us.
No.
That can be your final words.
All right, so thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. I want to thank our $100 a month Patreon subscribers. You get your name read on every show. Brandon Luke, Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle, and the lovely Christy Avery, who will be on, will be on another episode of Miranda's World, one of our podcasts. We have a lot of new podcasts out there in the world. Go to WeAreLibertarians.com. You can see all of our other shows. If you want to learn how to podcast, the Chris Spangle Show. If you want to learn about what it's like to live as a stripper, Miranda's World, the Brian Nichols Show, brand new show. I think if you like this show, you will love the Brian Nichols Show, so check that out. And we will be back next Tuesday. Also, if you want to join the Patreon, it's patreon.com/WeAreLibertarians, and $5 a month or up, and you get access to all the bonus content, including Harry's weekly show. There's going to be that you got an extra 30 minutes of the last episode. You always hear the beginning and the end. There's always I leave the recorder running at the beginning of the show, so you hear all the pre-talk. Higher quality, no commercials. It's such a great deal. $10, you get access to the private Facebook group. You can chat with listeners while we live stream the show. You can watch it live. And then $25, you get two posters, one of them signed. And then $100 a month, you get to come on the show. We're working with Jason Doolittle. He's actually going to fly out and be on the show. I need to talk to Craig and Brandon about coming on. And Creighton,
I do have a final thought. Yes, sir. Stop eating Tide Pods, you freaking idiots.
No. I disagree. Eat Tide Pods. It'll work out for everybody in the end. All right. Thanks for joining us here on this episode. And until Tuesday of next week, we say be good to each other.
Oh, we changed the sign off?
Well, I mean, we can do it again.
What is be good to each other?
What?
Be good. That's so hippie crap.
What do you want me to do?
On my doorstep.
Oh, let's go give each other a big hug.
No crack.
All right, what should I say?
We'll do better next week. That's what you said for every episode. For like,
that way you're always doing better.
Here's the problem. I used to have regular co-hosts, and so now I have a lot of people that are coming on the show who aren't a part of it, and I can't just go, hey, do you mind saying we'll do better next? Like, it just doesn't work if you don't
You say it. You're on every episode.
I also don't know that I can do better next time.
We'll say that.
Sign off.
I'll try.
And I could,
it doesn't have to make any sense. It's just a sign off.
And I can't do any better than this.
We promise to do better next time.
It sounds better than hug your neighbor.
Yeah.
Please suck a dick.
In the after show and the after party for this show, we've got a drum circle.
We're going to sing Kumbaya.
Fuck you guys.